Today on Coding 101, we're getting more Perl with inputs and if-thens. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Coding 101 is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Coding 101 is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 35 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you to take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off any image file on your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code CODING614. And by Lynda.com. Learn what you want when you want with access to over 2,400 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/C101. That's lynda.com/C101. Welcome to Coding 101. It's the TWiT show where we introduce you to the secrets of the code monkey. I'm Father Robert Ballasier.
And I'm Shannon Morrison. For the next 30 minutes, we are going to get you all coded up on everything you need to know to be a Perl code warrior.
Now, Shannon, last week we introduced people to Perl, and it was a more or less easy language, but some people kind of freaked out.
Yeah, it was pretty easy. There was a little bit of confusion at the end with the arrays.
Yeah.
So today, starting off, since we are recording this right after the last episode, we didn't have any user feedback yet, so we don't have any codes from you guys from our Google Plus community. So I am going to show you three of my own codes.
Yeah.
So, to get you involved with variables, scalar variables, and arrays. So let's go ahead and take a look at my computer. I have three different codes that I have created, number one, number two, and number three. These are called printing, scalars, and arrays. So if I click on printing, it just prints a couple of strings. So it says, this is Snubbly's first string. Everyone rejoice! And then it has a whole bunch of numbers. So if I go into the actual code, and I'm just editing this in Notepad, it basically just says, this is the first variable. It's called numbers are cool. And it obviously knows it's a number. The second one is a string called string thing.
There we go. All right.
I put it in quotes, and it just says my string. Next, I printed the string example first, and then I printed the number example second. And
now, there are a few things. Thank you for doing this, because there are a few things that are very important. The first thing is you'll notice that the capitalization is important.
Yes.
Okay, so you have to match capitalization. If you put capital numbers are cool, that's different than the variable numbers are cool.
So if I capitalize that C right there,
that's
I
not going
to
work.
Have to capitalize
exactly
the C
unless
right
you
there.
Do that. So just be aware of that. And make sure that you match your capitalization. The other thing, and people had an issue with this, especially if you're using Windows. I know. Okay, all the jokes have been done.
Hey man, I use Windows and Linux.
People were complaining that it scrolls too fast. Like they don't see the program. That's why we put the SDI in. That's standard input at the bottom. We used to do that in Python, right? Because what it does is it waits for the user to hit enter. So if you want, just get used to putting STDIN in the carets at the bottom, and that will, it won't close the window until you hit enter.
Yeah, I just copied that to every single one of my programming codes for Perl. That made it easy. So moving on, I'll go ahead and go to my second one. So this one is scalars. So if I click on that, we have three different variables that show up. 16, coding 101 is made of wood, and 16.5. So we have a float, we have a regular integer in there, and we have a string.
Okay, and what you're doing is you're illuminating the fact that, and we love this about Perl, and we actually like this about Python too, we don't have to care about what's going to go in there.
Yeah,
Perl's going to figure it out, right?
So let's see. For this first one, the dollar sign, I could just call this number.
Number.
And I'll need to change this to number as well to make that run. And then the second one is coding 101. That's my string. And then 16.5, you'll notice that's not in quotes, that float number. And that one is my third variable.
There we go.
I just print them. I put the slash n at the end so that each one enters out to a new line. And then standard input at the bottom so that it enters out. That's it. Easy.
Nice and easy.
And my third one is the array. So this is built right on top of your code, Padre, that you
This is the one that I think some people started to lose it on.
Yeah,
because it's easy to understand printing. It's easy to understand simple variables. This is a little different.
So I'll show you what my program looks like first, and then I'll show you the code.
Of course,
so it just says, here are the values of the array Sailor Moon. So I built an array called Sailor Moon, and I have three different variables in it called Usagi, Hotaru, and Setsuna. Three names of Sailor Scouts.
Because the fact that you know that off the top of your head is awesome.
Shut up.
Okay.
So the values of Sailor Moon have also been copied into a new array called Anime. So here are the values of the array Anime. And since it's just copied straight over, you get the same thing. Usagi, Hotaru, Setsuna. And then hit enter again for the standard input that I put at the end of each of these different lines of programming. Now I'm changing the value of the third element. So the third one is Setsuna. From an anime, from Setsuna to Sailor Pluto, because that's the Sailor Scout that Setsuna is. So I changed it to Sailor Pluto at the end. The other two have not been changed because I didn't change those in my array. Hit enter. And then in the meantime, the array anime stays the same.
Right, exactly, because you made a copy of the array.
Exactly.
So even though you changed one of them, the copy stays the same.
And
oh, my goodness. And there goes our TD being...
Can we watch this all day?
No, no, we can't. Oh, that's kind of freaky, actually. I forgot that part.
All right, so I'm going to hit enter, and I'll go ahead and show you the code behind it all. Okay, so at the top, we have Sailor Moon. So we have this array made with the at sign at the beginning, and then I put it in parentheses, and each one has quotes around it. The first one's called Usagi. Then we have Hotaru. There's a comma separating each one and a space, and then Setsuna is the last one, and then a semicolon at the end. Next, I printed just a regular string. Here are the values of the array Sailor Moon, and then an enter at the end. And then I printed each of the different variables inside of that array.
Now, let's pause here, because this is something that I think people kind of got confused with, because they said, wait a minute. The array is called Sailor Moon, and you use the at symbol. Why are you using the dollar sign symbol down below? This is actually very important, people. If you got confused at the end of the last episode, let me explain it right now. At Sailor Moon, that line that we have at the top, that absolutely opens up a new array. And the array, as we learned in the first episode, is just a list of scalar variables. Scalar bare variables were the first variables we covered that had the dollar sign as their symbol, right?
First one, second one, and third one.
Exactly. Now, at the bottom, you might be wondering, wait a minute. If the array is called Sailor Moon, why am I using the dollar sign, which is associated with the scalar variable? The reason is because what is an array? We already defined what an array was. An array is a list of scalar variables. So if I'm talking about the entire array, I use the at sign.
Yes.
But if I'm talking about an individual element within that array, it's just a scalar variable, right?
Exactly.
Because an array is nothing but scalar variables. So in this instance, because I'm calling out index number 0, index number 1, and index number 2, I use the dollar sign.
1 is Hotaru. 2 is Setsuna.
There we go.
So each one is separated. And then we move down to anime. So this is where I'm taking those values of Sailor Moon and I'm copying them into a new array called anime. So here we have array number 1 called Sailor Moon, and it's equal to array number 2, which is anime.
Right. And she is using the array symbol because we're making a copy of the
entire array. Yeah,
right.
It's just a copy. You're not editing in anything or whatever. You're just copying it over. So if I print each variable inside of anime, it's going to be the same thing. Usagi, Hotaru, and Setsuna.
Boom. Yep.
Moving on, I'm now changing the value of the third element in anime from Setsuna, the first name of it, to Sailor Pluto. So here we have Sailor Moon 2. So that's the very last variable in our original array right here, Setsuna. So if I scroll back down, here we go. Now it's going to say equal to, and it gives it a new title of Sailor Pluto.
You're just reassigning it.
Yes.
We've done that before in the languages we've covered.
And then I print out the same thing. I have Sailor Moon, the first part, the first variable, the second variable, and the third variable, which is Sailor Pluto. So you see this one changed from Setsuna to Sailor Pluto.
Boom.
And then I hit enter again, and the last part of this is, in the meantime, the array anime stays the same. So you'll notice up here we had Sailor Moon 2 changed to Sailor Pluto. Down here we have anime 2, does not change. That one stays as Setsuna. Now I've said Setsuna so many times that I feel like it's not a word anymore.
I know. Actually, isn't Setsuna like an Setsuna? Orange?
I think it means time.
Like
or
the 11th Doctor liked Setsuna. Oh no, it's a Setsuna.
Sad tuna.
Sad. It was like a little. Never mind. Okay, never mind. Okay, so that gives us a really good recap of what we covered in the first episode.
And I'll be putting this on GitHub. Haven't gotten around to it yet.
Right, it will be.
It'll go up right after the recording.
Yeah, folks, all the code from all of our episodes is going to end up in the GitHub that's linked inside of the Coding 101 show notes. So make sure to go there because then you don't have to copy stuff off the screen. You can just download the code, copy and paste it into whatever notepad editor that you're using to create the files.
And then break things.
And then break things. Because we like to break things.
Yay!
You know what doesn't break?
What?
Well, I was just thinking about media. Because, you know, sometimes what you want is you want these durable images, these video clips, these things that make people learn and want stuff.
I know of some media that you can get for a really good price.
No way.
Yeah, Way?
Okay,
Way.
Hit me.
So it's a site called Shutterstock.com. Bam. They have over 35 million high-quality photos and videos for everything that you could ever need. So obviously, this episode of Coding 101 is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. At Shutterstock.com, you'll find perfect images or videos for your next creative project. So whether it's a website or you need to post some stuff on your blog, a video, or any other type of project that you're working on, you can choose over 35 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. Shutterstock sources images from around the world, and they put them at your fingertips from tons of contributors who are professional photographers and artists. And plus, they review every single image that comes in, every single video that comes in for content and quality before adding it to the library. So you're not going to get anything that's really, really terrible on the site. Everything is awesome. Everything is awesome. So they add 20,000 images every day. So every time you visit, you're going to find something new, whether you're just searching for flowers every time or code every time, you're going to find something new. And they have flexible pricing. You can choose individual image packs or a monthly subscription for the best deal. You can download 25 images per day with a standard subscription. That's pretty awesome. And you can download any image in any size, and you can pay only one price. Bam! Shutterstock also gives you the images you need to bring your creative projects to the next level, and they make it easy. They have sophisticated search tools. You can search anything: color, file type, gender, emotion, whatever. Shareable light boxes, so you can save images to a light box gallery and you can access them. You can share them with other team members or your friends and say, oh, do you like this picture? And an amazing award-winning iPad app, so you can search on the go and use it to display images during a presentation. Wonderful. Hey, you just got a raise. And Shutterstock has a global marketplace, multilingual customer support in more than a dozen international countries, and full-time customer support throughout the week. So if you're trying to find something in the middle of the night, don't worry, they got you covered. And today I found a few pretty interesting ones of corgis, of course, because Brian's in charge over there and he loves corgis.
Those are crazy cute.
But they're so cute. Oh, can we find happy corgis? I want to find some.
They're all happy. There's no such thing as a sad corgi.
Sad pandas.
Aww.
Oh, find a panda. I want a panda picture. Give me a panda. Yes, pandas.
Aww. No, even better. Give me a red panda. Now, those things are cute.
Pandas. Red pandas are
the fire foxes.
Adorable.
Oh,
yes.
See? Yes.
Okay. Oh. That just made my day. There's no credit card required, so you can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. No credit card needed. Just start an account, begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like, and save favorite images to a lightbox to review later. And once you decide to purchase, use the offer code CODING614, and new accounts will receive 20% off any image file. Any. Go, choose, find one. You'll spend hours on there. Trust me, there's so many good pictures to look at. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 20% off any image file on new accounts, use the offer code CODING614. And of course, we thank Shutterstock for supporting our show, Coding 101. Thank you, Shutterstock.
Thank you, Shutterstock.
We like your pictures.
We love you. And the red pandas. Thank you for the red pandas. And the corgis. Yes.
I wish somebody would send us a red panda.
They tear things apart.
That's okay.
Kind of
just leave it in the studio. It'd be fine. Moving
on. Okay, moving on. Let's talk a little bit about coding. Now, We of course, we're pre-taping this episode because she's got to get married because, like, evidently that's more important than coding.
That's what happens.
Whatever. I don't know.
I'm
I don't understand
old.
That. But I jumped into the old brain time machine, and I know there's a lot of people screaming at us right now in both email and in the G Plus group saying, Padre, well, how about this? And why didn't you do it this way? And why didn't you use this? Yes. There are so many ways to do everything in Perl. In fact, that's one of the things that our code warrior tried to instill in me when he was running me through some of the code that we would be running. We are giving you a single way. And normally we're giving you the easiest way to do something. There are much more elegant ways to do pretty much every function, every process, every procedure that we're going to teach you. That's one of the wonderful things about Perl, which is you choose the way that you like. You choose the way that works best for the problem you're trying to solve.
It's very similar to using the Linux terminal in a way.
It really is, right? I mean, there's no bad way to use it. If you can get something done, then that's great.
That's the way you do it.
And the more ways you learn how to do it, the better off you'll be. So we're teaching you one way, but please, and we're both going to say this, don't stop at Coding 101. Because we're never going to be able to give you in the 8 weeks of any programming module everything that you need for a language.
And, right? Of course, if you know an easier way to do something, or if you feel like the way that you have been doing for years is easier, share it with us on our Google Plus community.
Yeah. And actually, go in there. And the wonderful thing is, guys, when you comment, just remember that everyone is learning. It doesn't matter how advanced you are. You can always be introduced to something new. So be nice, be friendly, and tell someone, hey, I noticed you're doing it this way. Have you considered doing this? It's one of the things that we do to help out our code monkeys.
So we reviewed arrays, we have reviewed scalars, variables.
Well,
so
okay.
What's next?
Well, I mean those variables are great because they allow us to actually, you know, you can't actually do anything in a program without variables. But there's one thing that's really missing, a very basic feature of any programming language.
Let me guess.
Go.
Allowing a user to put in their own input?
Yeah, because if the only input we can use is hard-coded into the software, then
that's no good.
It's not really useful. So we wanted to give you one of the easiest ways, and again, there are many ways to do this, but one of the easiest ways to get input from the user into the program. And you've actually seen it before because I put it at the bottom of my programs in order to keep the window.
Are you talking about standard?
Standard input. S-T-D-I-N. This is a function that's built into Perl that allows you to wait for input from the user, and then when they hit enter, it takes that input and it puts it into the variable that you assign. Now, there are several ways to do this, but remember, whenever you use S-T-D-I-N, it's also going to include the carriage return. So if you're a really, really good coder, I'm not going to cover it here, but if you're a really good coder, go ahead and look up chomp. The chomp function that's built into Perl, what it does is it strips off the carriage return.
It chomps it.
But okay, let's not do that.
Awesome.
Let's take a look at what some of this code actually looks like. It's really, really simple. This is what a standard input looks like. This particular program is going to print a line saying, please type in your age. You know, we've done this before in C# and in Python. And then it's going to create a variable, and it's going to say age is equal to standard input, S-T-D-I-N. Again, this all it does is it's going to wait for the user to type in something. And when they hit the carriage return, standard input is going to put that value into the variable called age.
Oh.
Okay. And then it's
easy.
Going to print your age is, and then variable.
And then whatever they typed in.
It's just going to type in exactly, it's going to put out whatever they typed in. Super simple program. And when I run it, it's going to look a little something something like this. So T's, please type in your age.
Let's 62.
See. I am 82.
That was close.
Yeah. And your age is 82. Okay? Now, super simple.
Yeah.
But again, this is important because it allows us to take information from the user and actually run it through our program. The other thing to remember here, and I'm going to stress this a couple of times until people get it into their memory, is I don't have to end the print string in order to print the variable.
Oh.
This kind of freaked out some people because they're used to saying Python and C#, where you'd have to do something like this, where you'd have to say, okay, well, right, I end the string, and then I print the variable. You don't have to do that, because in Python is looking for this, and it knows when you put that there, it knows you're dealing with a scalar variable, and it will print the scalar variable.
That's cool.
Right?
Okay. I got this so
cool.
far.
Yeah. So now let's go from that. That's standard input. It's really simple. Let's go to something that is a little less simple, but we've played with it a lot, and that is going to be if then else, if else,
yay!
Else, if. You're going to want to come back to us, Brian.
Okay.
Okay, so this is going to be using comparative operators. Do you remember these from C# and from Python?
Yeah.
Remember, equal to, greater uh-huh. than, greater than, equal to, less than, equal to, yeah. less than, yeah. So these are the six basic operators that I can use to put inside of a conditional statement. Remember, a conditional statement is always true or false. Mm-hmm. There's only two options. It's either going to be true or it's going to be false.
Right.
So, for example, if I have 6 equals 6, that statement is true.
Yes.
6 is equal to 6. If I have 5 greater than 7, and I put that into a conditional statement, that's going to be false, because 5 will never be greater than 7.
Right.
Okay? Now, I can use these conditional operators to compare two, say, variables.
Okay.
And in those two variables, it will allow me to change the condition from true to false, and to either have an if statement run or not, have a piece of code run or not. And again, this is the basic building block of any program.
Yes.
The ability to make a decision is based on if, then, else statements.
Okay.
All right. So let's take a look at what the code looks like. Here we go. This is actually a revamp. This in the comments. This is a Python program that we did a couple of weeks ago that took number A, number B, and then compared number A to number B. And then it just said,
I remember that.
Is A less than B? Is A equal to B? Or is B less than A?
Yeah.
Right? Very simple. And this is a decision tree, right? So let's say I entered 1 for A. I entered 2 for B. The first if would say, okay, is 1 less than B?
Yes.
It's going to say yes. And it's going to print A is less than B, and it's going to skip everything else.
But
right?
if you switch that around.
Right. Then it would get to the first statement. It'd say, is 2 less than 1? It would say, no, it's not. Then it would say, well, then is 2 equal to 1?
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Then it would say, okay, well, if it's not the first statement, it's not the second statement, it has to be the third statement, and
it's
therefore
the
B is less than A. Right.
Cool.
And the nice thing about Perl is it's exactly the same. Now, the terms are slightly different. In Python, I used if, elif, and else.
Yeah.
In Perl, I'm going to use if, else if, and else.
Oh.
So I changed one thing. Everything else looks the same. Now, here's my thing. So I'm going to say, please enter a first number, a whole number. Input is equal to standard input. Please enter a second whole number. Input 2 is equal to standard input. So I now have two numbers from the user, right?
Okay.
Then it's going to run me through this. Now, my if-else statements look almost like Python. You're going to notice a few differences. The first is I'm using brackets again.
Ah,
so we're back to C#.
Back to brackets. Okay.
Right, okay. Notice that I have a semicolon in the code base for where it would execute. Right. So if this is true, if this conditional statement is true, if input 1 is less than input 2, then print the first number is less than the second number.
Okay.
If that's not true, then it's going to move on to the second case. Okay. Well, is input 2 less or greater than input 2?
Mm-hmm.
If it is, then it's going to say the first number is greater than the second number.
Right.
If it's not greater than or less than, then the only thing left
it moves on to the else.
Is it's equal. Right. Exactly. So when I run this, it's going to do this. My software will say, please enter a whole number. I'm going to say 6. And please enter a second whole number. I'm going to say 6. It's going to run through the if and through the else if and get down to the last one. And it's going to say, oh, well, they're the same value.
Yeah. Okay. That's easy.
Very simple decision tree. Very simple. But this is how it works in Perl. So if you remember your Python examples, it's the exact same. The only thing that's different is we call the else statement different. And we put the code base in brackets.
Woo!
Okay?
I got it.
Nice and simple. Now, the cool thing about that, again, is because that really doesn't matter how advanced your program gets, you're going to be building if-else statements into
yes.
your software.
Pretty much no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there's something else I should mention, and actually our code warrior is going to get to it, and that is I used 6 conditional operators. I used equal to, not equal to, greater than, less than, greater than, equal to, or less than, equal to.
Okay.
There's actually a whole lot more.
Oh, there are?
Yeah, and actually Perl is pretty extensive
boy.
In the number of conditional operators you have, but they all work the same way. All conditional operators are there to give you either a true or a false, to either allow a tree to run or not to run.
Where can I find all of these?
You're going to find. We're going to have the notes inside the show notes.
Awesome.
We're also going to put a couple of links to some decent Perl documents. But more or less, just play with them. I mean, if you've got a conditional statement, you can put anything in there.
Yeah.
So play around with some of the more advanced conditional operators,
Hey, I can't wait to write my first if-else statement in
Perl. Absolutely, absolutely. Now, we are talking a lot about knowledge that people should have that maybe they don't have right now, and knowledge that they're not going to get through a 101 program.
Shannon, I bet there's another place online where you could find that.
I wish there were. You know, some place that could give you easy to understand, easy to follow, easy to skip to lessons so that you can find exactly what you're looking for.
I know a site.
What?
Lynda.com.
I've heard of this Lynda.com. In fact, what I heard about Lynda.com, it is the place, the online repository of knowledge. It's a place where you go if you want to update your business skills or perhaps learn a new programming language or maybe even recall something that you've forgotten. That's what Lynda.com is all about. Now, Lynda.com helps you to learn and keep up to date with your software, pick up brand new skills, or explore new hobbies with their easy-to-follow video tutorials. Whether you want to master the fundamentals of programming, learn a new programming language like Python, or build your first iOS app with Swift, Lynda.com offers thousands of courses in a variety of topics. At Lynda.com, exploring programming fundamentals, getting started in everything from databases and object-oriented design to code efficiency and test-driven development is part of the package. There's also a course on the new features of Java SE 8 and the foundations of programming, Programming for Kids, which teaches kids to program using techniques, apps, and hardware. In other words, Lynda is all about giving you the methods and the tools that you need to learn in the way that will be most efficient. Now, we've been using Lynda here on Coding 101 to sort of fill in the knowledge, especially since a lot of these languages, well, it's been years, it's actually been decades since I've done them in the real world. It's always nice to have an easy-to-follow, easy-to-access, easily-indexed repository of knowledge. Now, Lynda has over 2,400 courses with more added weekly. All Lynda.com courses are produced at the highest quality, not like homemade videos on YouTube, which, although they're great, may not have the best sound, may not have the best lighting, may not use the best cameras or the best actors. Lynda.com works with software companies to provide you updated training the same day new versions hit the market, so you'll always have the very latest skills. At Lynda.com, the instructors are accomplished professionals at the top of their fields, and they're passionate about teaching. These are not just in a classroom 24 hours a day type folks. They're actually out in the field. They know what works, and they know what the business world wants. Lynda has courses for all experience levels, from beginners, intermediate, and advanced, and you can watch from your computer, your tablet, or your mobile device. Whether you have 15 minutes or 15 hours, each course is structured so that you can learn from start to finish. You can also search the transcripts to find answers or read along with the video. They offer certificates of completion so that when you finish a course, which you obviously will, you can publish it to your LinkedIn profile, which is fantastic if you're a professional looking to tell companies what you've learned. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to try Lynda. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire Lynda.com course library, or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects, using the exact same project assets that they do. And you can try Lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/C101 to access the entire library. That's over 2,400 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/C101. And we thank Lynda for their support of Coding 101. Snubs found donuts.
Somebody just left these here, and
that
mine now.
That was weird. That was like input. This is standard input, actually.
I don't know how they got here. I think it was Liz. Liz gave them to
me. Well, you know what? Aside from the coolness of donuts just showing up on the set, I think that this is the time, Snubs, where we talk to our code warrior.
Yay!
Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, our code warrior, Mr. Patrick Delahanty.
I had 2 donuts already.
You had. It really is donut day.
Thank you for saving me one.
Now, Patrick, we did some basic stuff today. We talked about standard input. We talked about decision trees with if-else statements. That's kind of fundamental, right? I mean, no matter what the language, you kind of have to know that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm going to demonstrate a little bit more, take it one step further.
Ready.
Okay, I've got a program here. I'm going to run it first, and then I'll show you how it worked. This one. Pick a number, any number.
16.
16. You entered an even number.
Oh, okay. Let's
try that again.
This is good.
Pick a number, any number.
4,001.
4,001. You entered an odd number.
It works!
And this odd. Also works with negative numbers.
Ooh.
Negative 52 is an even number.
Oh.
It also works with floating points.
Actually, I haven't tried that.
I should.
Let's try it.
3.14.
3.14.
Odd number.
Odd number. It did work.
How about that?
So now let's look at the code behind this. So here we see I've got the print statement, and then I'm accepting standard input. That's similar to what you had in your programs. Now here is my if statement. If number.
Mod.
This is percent is a mod. So if number mod 2
right.
and 2, because I want to determine even
exactly.
or odd.
Now, for the folks who may not remember, we did this in Python. What mod does is it doesn't give you the answer. It doesn't give you the quotient. What it does is it gives you the remainder. So if I do something mod 2, it's saying if I divide it by 2, what's left over? Well, if it's an even number, there should be zero left over. If it's an even number, you'll get nothing. But if you mod to an odd number, obviously you're going to get at least one.
Now, isn't mod short for modulo?
Modulus.
Okay.
Which is Klingon for, is it odd?
No, modulus will be in the next Avengers movie, I think.
Yes.
Okay. Whoa, okay. Focus, people. All right. So back to the code. This is a fantastic example of a decision tree. So you're using a simple math, which is modulus, which allows us to determine whether or not an inputted number is going to be odd or even. But I noticed that your if-then statement looked a little different from mine.
You mean just the formatting?
Yeah.
My habit is to put the brackets on the same line rather than a new line.
Exactly. But this is one of the cool things about this. Remember, it doesn't matter. If you go back to his code, Brian, you'll see that the brackets are, as long as you've got the semicolon where it should be, this, again, could be all on the same line. So
pick the
style that's good for you and...
All on the same line. That would just be hard to read. So let's
not
do that.
And as long as you have your open and closed brackets, it works.
Absolutely.
And Worf approves.
And Worf approves. All right. What else do you got for us?
All right. So let's get out of this, and we'll go into my next little bit here. This one, I'm, again, doing standard input, but here I'm evaluating a string.
Cool.
And so... It's asking, what is your favorite animal? And then if animal equals bunny, and you'll notice here I have the backslash n because it's included in the standard input after I hit return.
And this is not one of our standard six operators that we talked about. So this is EQ.
Yes.
EQ is interesting because what it does is it compares a string. So is one string equal to another string?
Cool.
Yes. And so then it says, it repeats the input, says, you said whatever, and says, yes, bunnies are the best. Or you said animal or whatever the animal is. And says, all right, whatever. So let's try running this real quick. What's your favorite animal? Let's put in...
Doge.
Cat.
Doge.
Doge. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, whatever. And let's try it again with the best animal. Bunny. You said bunny. Yes, bunnies are the best.
Yay!
Now,
sometimes I feel like this game is fixed.
Now, if I entered like... rabbit. You said rabbit. Okay, whatever.
Oh.
But it's like the same thing. So I've got another example here. We'll look at, and this one, I'm accepting two values. So if animal equals bunny, and then these two.
Tell them the pipes. So what do the pipes mean?
The two pipes mean or.
Aha.
Oh, cool.
And there's also, the code needed, I could put ands.
Right,
this
would
say
it would have to be both.
Yes, if they entered bunny and rabbit, which they can't really do in this case.
Right. Now, one of the things that people should realize is that when we start doing this, especially the pipes and the ampersands, you can do multiples. So you could say, if this or this or this or this or this, and just keep going.
Oh, yeah, keep going.
You could, it gets really messy really fast. Or you could do things like say, if this or this and that or that, and this and you can, so these are just logical operators, but folks, be very careful when you start doing that. It's incredibly easy to trip yourself up.
Yeah, and you'll see I use parentheses to try to keep track here. I've got the bunny one in one set of parentheses and the rabbit one in the other with another set of parentheses around the whole thing.
Okay.
Right.
So we'll run this real quick. See? So bunny... Yes, bunnies are the best. rabbit.
Right.
Yes, bunnies are the best. And but if I put in bunny rabbit or whatever.
There you go.
So am I going to have to... Oh, he fell over. So, I mean, one option to get around this, I could keep entering more ores and say, okay, if it's bunny rabbit, bunnies, or bunny rabbit, or so. But there's other ways to do this. So what I'm going to introduce here is a regular expression. And this is what Perl, I think, is best at.
It's good at
amazing.
It.
Amazing.
Yeah. I have not found another language that does regular expressions better
and
than Perl.
So we're going to use a lot of this going forward. What I've done here... It's all the same script, except I've changed this.
What?
Yeah.
What is that?
Okay, so what this is, the equals tilde, it's looking for, and then I have the slash bunny
What in
slash.
The world?
So what this is doing, it's actually looking inside the string for bunny.
So they could have typed in a whole bunch of garbledy gook.
Yeah, they could type in, I really hate that bunny. And it would say, oh, you type bunny.
Right, right. So, yeah, what you're saying is, if anything, if in the entire string it finds bunny, it finds that collection of characters, doesn't matter if it's surrounded by a lot of other characters, it will take it as a valid response.
Yes, and the G here means global, so it looks in the entire string. The I is case insensitive. So if I type it in all caps, it's going to match.
Cool.
And I did the same thing over here for rabbit. And so we'll exit out and run this. Favorite animal? Let's just do the standard bunny. Yes, that works. We'll do bunny rabbit. Yes, bunny rabbit.
There you go.
And then let's do... I really think that rabbits are awesome.
There you go.
Yeah, it finds it in there.
That's awesome.
And so it knows that... Oh. Oh, bunny.
Oh my gosh, Brian.
I'm bunny overloaded right now, Brian.
Yeah.
Is that the bunny's noise when the bunny types? Bunny programming?
Bunnies don't type very well.
Now, what I like about this, if you could go back to your code, what I love about this is if we had done this the old way in Python, we would be doing every possible combination in order to make sure that we get a valid response, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is what makes regular expressions in Perl so powerful, which is, if I'm just looking for a string, I can tell Perl, as long as this string of characters comes up, I can consider this a valid response. That's incredibly powerful.
Yeah, and this comes in handy when, you know, somebody has to enter an email address and you want to verify it's valid. Oh, does it contain an at and at least one period?
And a com.
That's cool.
Yeah, and,
exactly.
Or, like, a certain number of letters in there. And so I love Perl for this.
Fantastic.
Well, hey, do we have time for the last code?
I think so. I think let's do that.
So I get a little crazy here. And in this one, enter your favorite number, and then you see number.
What in the world is going on?
What I'm doing...
I give up. I quit. No, just kidding.
There's a whole list of different attributes. I don't know if you call them attributes, but different things you can put in here to determine if it's in the string. So what I'm doing here is I'm saying if number contains... And then this backslash D, that means not a digit.
Okay.
So backslash D, that tells me, okay, that's not a number. The plus here means there's at least one of them. And then because the standard input has the slash N, I work around that by doing, okay, it contains any number of other things, maybe none, and then the backslash N. And the dollar sign is the end of the string.
Right.
But that's
so essentially, this is a quick and dirty way to do a sanitization. So if you are expecting a number, if you're looking for a number, you could run this one line, and it's using a regular expression to parse the input, and it will say whether or not it actually contains a number.
That's cool.
There you go.
But if I run it again and say, thank you.
That's cool. Yeah.
So, again, this is stuff that we've done in Python. It looks crazy confusing, but what we're going to have
in
the show notes...
I'm going to have a hard time memorizing
that. Don't memorize it. It will eventually come. We're going to put all of those expressions, all those regular expressions, in the show notes.
Okay.
Now, what we don't have examples for them all because there are a lot of them, but what you can do is take the code that we give you, just the expressions, the if-then statements, and start substituting them for those regular expressions and get in there and actually see what each and every single one of them does. Folks, that's really the best way to learn the code. Patrick, thank you so very much for sharing that with us.
My pleasure.
Now, can you give us a hint maybe what the Coding 101 monkeys are going to get for next week?
I think next week we're going to hit those regular expressions again. We're going to do search and replace.
Ooh. Search and replace. And I believe, is it in 2 weeks that we're actually going to start bringing in stuff from the web?
We might.
That's going to be fun.
That's going to scare people.
it's so fun.
It'll be
fun. Great.
Patrick, if you could, thank you again for being our code warrior. If you could tell the folks at home where they can find you, where they can find your bunnies, and where they can find your work.
You can find me on Twitter at @pdelahanty. And my website is, you can go to animecons.com or adequate.com. They both point to all my stuff.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Patrick, thank you for being our code warrior. Oh, Shannon, again, that was a lot of stuff. That's the second week in a row.
I was busy looking at bunnies.
I'm sorry. I know. It's bunnies eating a raspberry. There's really nothing better. But if they wanted to find where we're going to put those expressions, where we're going to be putting our code, where should they go?
Go over to twit.tv/code. That's where you'll find all of our show notes for every single episode that we do of all of our modules, as well as interviews. And you can also find our GitHub link in each of the episode show notes. And that'll link you to all of the different programs that we have shown you here. So you can download them yourself and copy and paste. You can break them if you want to and just play around and get into the habit of using that Perl code.
Yes, yes. And don't forget, we also have a YouTube page. I know that not a lot of you watch it. Most of our people get it off of iTunes or download it directly from the RSS feed. That's fine. Please consume it any way you want. But we do have the YouTube channel if that's how you want to look at our episodes. And, I've been chatting with some of the people in the G+ community. We are going to have to start doing some regular hangouts because there are people, some experts, who want to share their knowledge. We can't have them all on the show. We can have them in the hangouts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Part of the reasons why you want to be part of our
Now
Google
we keep on talking about this Google
we don't,
Plus
we
community.
Don't do it, but we're gonna.
You can find our Google Plus community over at plus.google.com/twitcoding101.
Over 1,000 members.
Yeah, we have plenty of members over there. There's some extra experts. There's some beginners. There's some guys that are intermediate. So if you have any kind of questions or if you just want to share your code with us, and I'll possibly show it in the next episode, then definitely hit up over there and join the community. It's a lot of fun.
Now, if you hate Google, if you're allergic to G+, then you can also find us on Twitter. We do, all the different social networks. You can find me at twitter.com/PadreEstre. That's @PadreEstre.
And I'm @Snubs. Easy.
Yeah. And until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
I'm Shannon Morse.
End of line.